Hello, America.
And the world.
Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay. We are behind the lines of socialism, my friends, and Radio Free Market is the voice of free people and free markets. Folks, this is a live call-in show today, and our topic is, now that the elections are over, what's next? So please call with your questions at 1-800-313-9443. Let me repeat that for you. That's 1-800-313-9443. Today we have an exciting show. First, I want to welcome our special guest, Dr. Yuri Maltsev. Welcome, Yuri.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have you, and I'm delighted to have you come again on Radio Free Market. It's always a delight to talk to you whenever we can have the opportunity to do so. So, everyone, I want you to know that Dr. Yuri Maltsev is a world-renowned economist and historian who fled the Soviet Union in 1989 and continues today to advise the United States government on foreign policy and economic matters, and has been, for these last 20-plus years, a very active and very, very loud voice of liberty. While I'm thinking of it, I'd also like to say hello to some of our Radio Free Market listeners who have contacted us recently. Specifically, I'd like to say hello to Jeff in Virginia, Oscar in California, Pat in Pennsylvania, and John in Nebraska. I want to thank you all for listening, and in your own way, thank you for standing up for freedom. So, Yuri, we were talking actually just a little while ago about before the show, and about what we were actually going to bring out in this show. And now that the elections are over, a lot of people are very hopeful that there's going to be reform in Washington. There's some new voices and new faces. Rand Paul, the son of Congressman Ron Paul, is there, and so on. And you brought up the point of back in the early 90s, I think you said, that in the former Soviet Union there was a 500-day plan of reform. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I do agree with you that it was a pivotal elections, that these elections showed me that the American people were very eager to alleviate that mistake which was made 2 years ago. In the Soviet Union was definitely too big to fail, according to Washington bureaucrats, and it was pretty much supported by that time President Bush the First and the Washington establishment. And when Soviet Union collapsed, then politically it was a great victory, like we witness today. However, in the socialists in the Soviet Union left a lot of mess in economics, and this mess we see here today as well. So it's a political victory, however, a great challenge in economics. And so at that time I wrote a short piece, Maltsev's one-day plan, because at that time Soviet Union adopted 500-day plan. And I was thinking, what in the world you can do in 500 days? The only thing to be successful is to do it in one fell swoop.
And not, as you say, call, pardon me for interrupting you, but I love this phrase that you say, I'm going to steal your thunder on this, and not phase in liberty. Could you expand on that?
Yes, absolutely. Because enemies of liberties, of liberty, they would consolidate their forces. They would oppose any kind of meaningful reforms, and the reforms would kind of fade away, like yesterday's news on our networks. What we need to do, we need to have it as a revolution, to have really radical reforms can be done only immediately. You cannot phase liberty in. It's all or nothing. And this is very important for us to understand. And at that time, when I wrote my Maltsev one-day plan, it was noticed by a great
I'm going to have to interrupt you, Yuri. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, we're going to have to come back right after the break, and then we'll expand on this a little bit more. And so, everyone, please stay with us. This is Radio Free Market. Your host, Michael McKay. I'm talking to Dr. Yuri Maltsev. We're going to be talking about not phasing in liberty. And welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market. I'm your host, Michael McKay, and I'm talking to Dr. Yuri Maltsev. And just before the break, Yuri, you were introducing your Maltsev one-day plan instead of the 500-day plan of reforms that they discussed in the Soviet Union. When you brought that out in the early 90s, how was that received by people here?
Amazingly enough, it was noticed and by two great libertarian thinkers, by Murray Rothbard, dean of Austrian School of Economics, a great economist, a great philosopher and historian, and also by Lou Rockwell, who both of them wrote their plans. There was Murray Rothbard, he wrote How Not to Socialize, and Lou Rockwell wrote Rockwell's 30-day plan. Mm-hmm. What should we do? And both of these documents today are just like they were written yesterday, like they were written on the 3rd of November, the day after our historic elections.
Mm-hmm. So the same kinds of reforms are required, but you made a very provocative point before the break, and that point was that we can't go halfway into liberty, that we really have to go all the way into liberty. Could you talk about that a little more?
Yes, absolutely. That's the idea of Rothbard and other libertarians, is that you cannot phase in liberty. You should do it at once. Then the next point would be to legalize all markets, to legalize the black markets as well, drastically lower all taxes. Then definitely you cannot have freedom without abolishing the government ability to create money. You cannot have freedom with a huge bureaucracy, which is almost one-third of labor force we have right now in the United States. We have government companies are owning each other, and they call it privatization. So we should all the time keep in mind that bureaucrats are very ingenious in developing all kind of smokescreen for their plans. So these are, I think, are the most important issues. Why we should do it in one fell swoop? I think Margaret Thatcher even once, she made a very, very interesting quip. She said, I can imagine if we in Britain would decide to switch from left-hand driving to right-hand driving, and we'll do it in 100 days, for example.
If
the first 10 days only the big trucks will go on the right, and then everybody else would follow. Why this is the case? Well, philosophically, it is because there's a different economic systems. The government, socialist economic system, and private markets. And they cannot coexist.
Mm-hmm.
There is no midway. It's all the time our liberals in the United States were looking for kind of a midway between liberty and slavery.
So let's talk about that, because that's a really, really interesting point. When I talk to people who are not educated on the topic of socialism, I often hear this concept that, well, wait a minute, you know, I thought socialism was actually supposed to be kind of good. There's, you know, it's for the working people, and it actually is. There has to be some kind of, you know, conscience for society, and our putting ourselves together. That's what really socialism is. It's us really kind of looking out for one another. So, how do you respond to that?
Well, that's kind of just socialist propaganda, nothing else. As socialism, the world experience with socialism was the most deadliest experience in human history. 170 million people were murdered by socialist governments in last century alone, and are still being murdered in the countries like North Korea, Vietnam, Laos, and many others. So it is the deadly system, which can exist only if it's based on violence, on the government violence against its people. Because under socialism, you do not have absolutely no incentives to do anything. Mm-hmm. So to force people to do what the government wants them to do, you need to murder people. And that's what they did. So I would say that the socialism for workers were more exploited under socialism than under even slavery. That's the major case, because under socialism, it's nothing else but public slavery.
Right.
And public slavery, because the slaves are not owned by anybody, owned by bureaucracy, collective bureaucracy, who doesn't care about people. That's why millions of them were expendable.
You know, it's an interesting thing, Yuri. When I've responded to these people, I've had them counter-respond and say, but there is a difference between communism and socialism. They somehow think that socialism is not bad, but communism, of course, is bad. And they would hear what you just said and say, well, that's just communism. But what you're really talking about is that there is no real difference between communism and socialism.
Right. Well, communism, for example, the Communist Party of the Soviet Union or Communist Party of the United States, why they call themselves communists? Because that was, they aspired to be communists. Marx said that communism will appear at 400 or 500 years from now. So communism is a utopia. It's a goal. It's a goal,
right,
of all socialists.
Right.
But the Soviet Union was Union of Soviet Socialist Republic,
right,
and they were not lying about that. It was,
in other words,
communism.
The concept of communism was supposed to be the goal and the ideal of socialism.
That's right.
Actually, when it was originally presented, it was going to be somewhat of, and it was accepted by many people to be a kind of a peaceful scenario. But you and I both know that Mr. Marx had no problem with having violence being done on many people.
Absolutely. Under socialism.
Under socialism.
Yes, under socialism. Because if you will read Marx, you will see that this is utopia. This is kind of a secular religion, nothing else. But he, when he's writing about communism, it's kind of a Neverland in a sense that the state will wither, as he said.
Mm-hmm.
That there will be no state. It will be a free association of free people, enjoying abundance of everything. And it's kind of like a paradise on earth.
Mm-hmm.
But he was pretty practical about that. His point was that he doesn't see that it would occur very soon, maybe in 300, 400, 500 years. In his letter to Engels, his friend, he was writing about that. Communism is used by socialism, the term to disassociate themselves with this mass murder. That's why they use the word communism. I think that this is just a smokescreen. I think socialists should be called socialists, and not communists or whomever else they would like to call themselves. It is socialist. China is a socialist country. Socialism is nothing but government ownership. Government ownership. And we see this government ownership expanded astronomically in the United States.
Now, we see in the United States the situation where we ostensibly have private property, but through regulations, we're prohibited, increasingly prohibited, in what we can do with our property. And this,
absolutely,
this is an encroaching aspect of socialism.
Yes, this is what our great Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises called German pattern of socialism, or Nazi pattern of socialism, when private property is recognized, but it is limited. It is limited by government central planning. And that's exactly what is the system today that we have in the United States. You can own property, but government will tell you whom to fire, whom to hire, what to do with yourself. The government would decide who is the winner, who is the loser on the market, on the planned marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Rothbard was making a point that the critical point is that you cannot plan markets. You cannot, and regulation of markets is nothing but central planning. Not many people understand that.
Right, right. There's an essay by Ludwig von Mises about there is no middle ground between socialism and freedom. And that when we try to make a compromise with socialism, we we're not actually making a compromise with socialism. We're basically just getting into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. The state interventionism, it leads to socialism, and it is socialism. At a certain point, the critical mass of socialism is already achieved. There is almost a point of no return. And then it would be very difficult where, for example, if the government would destroy automotive industry, it would destroy healthcare industry, it would destroy all other industries, and make these industries dependable on the state. They would not be competitive anymore, and it would be very difficult to privatize them again, in the sense that, for example, in the Soviet Union, I mean, how would you privatize Chernobyl nuclear power station or other things like that? Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that privatization right now is the cornerstone of liberty. Without privatization, we cannot do anything.
Yeah, privatizing everything and anything that is possible. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's very.
And I would begin, Michael, this is kind of, maybe you would be surprised, but I would begin not with even the most serious things like healthcare, which is already 55% owned and paid for by a government, but I would begin with a government propaganda machine, because that's the most detrimental for public mentality in the United States. And I'm talking about national public radio, public broadcasting systems. This is not a national public radio, it's national propaganda radio.
National propaganda radio, I love it. Well, that's fantastic. So we're going to come back right after the break, folks, and we'll be talking more with Dr. Yuri Maltsev, and we're going to be talking more about this situation that we find ourselves in now that the elections are over and the need for giving freedom a chance. Stay with us. Talk to you soon. And welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market. I'm your host, Michael McKay, and talking with Dr. Yuri Maltsev. We're talking about what is next now that the elections are over. So we now have a new caller. His name is Jim from Missouri. And so, Jim, are you with us? Hello? Hello? Is he there?
Yeah.
Hello, Jim?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you. So you're talking with Dr. Yuri Maltsev, and you're on Radio Free Market. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was kind of curious. You know, when you sit down and you're talking about the socialism, you know, if we're going to be self-dependent, we're going to have to operate within communities of support, don't you think?
Well, within communities that support, and that's what the free enterprise is all about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That mutual support and voluntary exchange and the cooperation between people.
Right.
Well, so wouldn't you say that probably, you know, what we're talking about is we've got to get back to being local?
Well, not necessarily just local, but we can talk about how, I mean, because the division of labor is so much broader than the local base, depending on where you are.
Right. And I do agree that centralization, that the federal kind of tyranny from Washington, D.C. is much worse than local governments, which you can kind of control more and know more, and there is not such a issue as an informational problem, which Hayek was talking about, that people just don't know what's happening in Washington. That's why they permit it to happen.
Well, that's local. One of the things that's really confused me sitting back and watching how big they make the presidency.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, is that a dictator? Is that a king? Why is so much attention being put toward the federal level?
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, why are we even paying attention to it? We need to be paying attention to what's going on in our backyard.
Absolutely, not even backyard, but with our lives. Yes, because what the federal government is growing, to the proportion that federalism already became a joke. The founding principles of the United States were almost, can see that federal government can mandate you to buy insurance or to do this or to do that, that federal regulations are the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that.
Well, you know, we have another caller. His name is Leo. He's calling in from Massachusetts. And so, Leo, are you with us?
Thanks. Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure. What is your question?
Yeah, now, if you believe in all this great privatization, you trying to tell me that the peasants did the wrong thing in Cochabamba?
What did you say? Would you repeat your question?
In Cochabamba, these giant corporations tried to privatize the public water, and the people totally revolted and threw them out. Cochabamba, look it up.
Okay.
All right. All right. Very good. Yes. Well, that the fact that there is a gigantic corporation somewhere trying to privatize something, this is not a free market kind of operator. I think was a very liberal economist, John Kenneth Galbraith. He even believed that big businesses is dependent on big government. And Murray Rothbard was warning that sometimes what we see is privatization. It's not privatization. It's the government cronies and big business are taking over. And then they would serve these people, and they would definitely provide them with all power these people need in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to refer Leo to one of our other shows that we have here on Radio Free Market on water and property rights that we had recently. It's in our archives at radiofreemarket.com. It's available for a free download. And we do talk about the various aspects of water and privatization of water. And one of the big problems that came out in that show or was illustrated is the government interference with various corporations that suddenly create a bigger problem, and how privatization has led to better access to clean and potable water and better economic conditions for those who have had it, as opposed to the centralization of water, which has created much bigger problems, you know, when it's centrally controlled by governments.
Right, and there's plenty of problems created by government or ownership of water and government water and sewer systems, yes, all around the United States and Canada. And mm-hmm. many people died because of poor quality of water. Say, when I came to the United States in 1989, was the scandal of enormous proportions in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
1 million people got sick.
Yeah, and so, you know, the incentives are not there to actually keep the water potable and safe. And there's some very interesting points that were made in that other show, which I would refer our listeners to. So when we come back, folks, after our next break, we're going to be talking about what's coming up next and what we can expect next after these elections, and what do we need to do in order to expand our freedoms and to hold the politicians' feet to the fire as we all look forward to having our freedoms expanded. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, and talking with Dr. Yuri Maltsev. And we started off this particular show talking about the need for reforms that still are there now that the elections are over, and the kinds of reforms that many people around the country are really looking for is an ending to this encroaching oppression that they see on their property rights, on their options in their life, and so on. And you brought up this topic of NPR, and why is this such a hot topic right at this particular minute, Yuri?
Because there is no any constitutional political, philosophical, or economic justification for the government radio or TV service. As government brainwashing its citizens is the worst thing which can happen to us. And it is happening. And NPR, as some people say, well, it's not effective. It is very effective. It is extremely effective. I see how people are getting permanent brain damage by listening to this propaganda radio all the time. And great Thomas Jefferson, he used to say that this is absolutely unbelievable, that the government can force people to pay for the ideas that they do not share, that the ideas they abhor, that the ideas they find sinful, and they are sinful. And however, I'm not saying that we should make National Public Radio conservative or libertarian radio, no, or that they should balance, no, they should not be balanced, they should be just shut up. Because subsidies to left-wing propaganda, don't we have enough of this coming from private sources? Like, we don't have MSNBC, we don't have George Soros, we don't have CNN, Time magazine, they already, New York Times, they produce so much of that, of the same socialist propaganda, and then to have government-funded radio to do the same would be completely inexcusable for Republican leadership to leave it alone. And I noticed that John Boehner, the future Speaker of the House, already made some critical remarks about NPR. However, he's saying that we should ask questions. I don't think here it's the time for us to ask questions about NPR. It's time for us to shut it down. Having said that, the same is applicable to other forms of government brainwashing, to national endowments, national endowments for the arts, national endowments for humanities. Why government should fund this? I have some friends here in Wisconsin. They would say, well, NPR sometimes they play classical music. Why government should play classical music? When Beethoven or Mozart were writing their great music, there was no government support or subsidy for them. Mm-hmm. I never heard about any great music or any great literature which was funded by national endowments. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. Besides that, philosophically, I mean, look at the public school system. Government already brainwashing our children in schools. And like it's not enough, we want right now to socialize healthcare to have the same system that you wouldn't have any choice in the most important field of human life in your health, in your body.
It really boils down to having choice. That's what it really boils down to.
Because choice is liberty. That's right.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, actually, I'm glad to hear that Leo is now back with us. Are you with us, Leo?
I thought.
Yeah, Leo. I apologize. I hit the wrong button, and so sorry you got disconnected there.
Yeah, I wanted to finish off the last thought, and what I see you doing is missing the whole point, and the whole point is this big A word, accountability. I don't care whether it's government or private. Unaccountable entities should be abolished. There should be no unaccountable entities. And that's the basic nuts and bolts. It's not a matter of socialism or communism or free market. It's a matter of accountability. Do you understand that?
Would you clarify your question? Go ahead,
guys. If I may, I wanted to say politely disagree, but I strongly disagree, I would say.
Explain.
Well, look, who would have the most unaccountable events in human history? It would be governments which went amok. As critical you can be to private sector, they didn't murder millions of people like governments did. How you can make Stalin accountable or Hitler accountable or Mao Zedong or today imperial bureaucracy in Washington, D.C.? It is almost impossible because what they do, they create clients. They create people. They give away all kind of freebies, and they create a lot of, and then these people will support what they have.
May I finish this off?
Mm-hmm. Please.
With accountability, those people would not get there to those positions of power. Don't you get it?
How would you make them accountable?
Yeah.
Because by holding them to citizen review boards.
Citizen
review boards on a national basis, local by local, because then this garbage doesn't get pushed through.
Well, I think that's an admirable ideal, and I encourage you to pursue it. You know?
Okay, thank you.
Right, it is. Really? However, these boards, would they be private boards or government boards, or how would you make the members of these boards accountable? Why wouldn't they sell out?
They would have to answer to the people and present themselves as as what they're actually doing, and have people in the organization that would be report back to the people, because otherwise these things run wild, whether they're private or public. It doesn't matter.
Leo, I was just watching TV. I live near Chicago. Some people were supporting Rod Blagojevich. You know this former governor of Illinois. And they asked one of them, why do you support Rod Blagojevich? This is ridiculous. And he said, he gave me a free bus ticket. Yeah, so that's, how about these members of the boards giving away free bus tickets or free condoms or free meal tickets? And then you can create a following.
Corporations do the same thing. There's no difference.
Well, again, I would recommend that you pursue your idea with creating these kinds of accountability boards. But I would echo Yuri's comment that where are they going to get their standing, and how are they going to have any authority when they're basically dealing with people that have the exclusive monopoly of the use of force? Because that's basically the big differentiation between the public and those in government.
I really don't want to solve one problem by creating a bigger problem. That's basically what I'm saying.
Well, very good. All right. Well, our best wishes, and thank you very much, Leo. Very good. All right. So, Yuri, let's go talk, expand this thing you mentioned about government schools and their influence.
Right, yes. So the problem with that would be all the time that it's just preposterous to believe that if you have a federal Department of Education, increased federal spending on education, that you will achieve something. Mm-hmm. This is a process. I'm not saying that it is a kind of Obama's problem. He inherited this problem already. We have a long tradition of deteriorating public education in the United States. And every president that's in economics is called the law of diminishing marginal returns, when every president is worse than his predecessor.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, however, George W. Bush gave us what No Child Left Behind Act, which is central planning in education. And this is very sad how the young minds are being corrupted. And again, there is no choice. Many people would say, well, look, I mean, the president is trying to implement Swedish model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I just had a discussion with my students about the so-called Swedish model. There is no such a thing as Swedish model. Sweden is way more free than the United States today.
Mm-hmm.
They have more freedom of choice. Then you can choose a school for your child. You can send your child to a parochial school, to any other school.
Mm-hmm.
And they will have exactly the same opportunities, whether it's a public school or it's a private school or not.
We've talked about this before, that in Sweden, and in fact throughout Scandinavia, there seems to be a big confusion among Americans, at least, between the differentiation of a relative lack of regulation that they have and a relatively high taxation system and social, they do redistribute a lot of money too. But that's not the lack of regulation allows new businesses to get formed. It allows people to do with their property more than what they want to do. And so, that is really the reason why it is much more, economically dynamic.
Michael, you are absolutely right, But from another hand, in the United States, we sometimes think, well, the Greek problems are with Greece. Are there pigs in the European Union, the Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain, which are heavily in debt, and they are not doing well and whatnot. And there are Swedes with very high taxes and whatnot. We are with very high taxes today.
Right.
If you look at the level of taxation of ordinary income of average people, we are paying more than Swedes do. Then in Sweden, they are going on the path completely opposite to ours. They are privatizing Social Security. They are privatizing healthcare. They are privatizing education. And we are moving exactly into opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
This is, yes, in Sweden, you're absolutely right. The government owns much less property than in the United States.
Yeah, you were mentioning how much land did Teddy Roosevelt nationalize?
In the United States, we have 45% of all land is owned by the federal government.
Yeah.
You will look at the states like Nevada, for example, 89%, if I'm not mistaken, Alaska, 90%, and many other states like that. And if you will look, Utah and Idaho. And these are so-called public lands. Public lands are neglected, usually in a terrible shape environmentally, and managed by the Bureau of Land Management instead of belonging to people. So that means it's not nor efficient nor good from the point of view of environment.
You know, I just want to review for our listeners what we've talked about many times in the past, the building blocks of freedom, private property, freedom of contract, sound money, freedom of mobility and association, free speech, rule of law. Would you like to kind of have some general comments about those building blocks, Yuri?
Absolutely. Well, if I may begin with what bothers me more, with the freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
The freedom of speech, you remember, returning back to National Public Radio, they fired the journalist Juan Williams, also another very liberal, very left-wing kind of journalist. And a lot of conservatives were saying, well, how awful it is, they're violating freedom of speech of Mr. Williams. Well, the existence of government radio is violation of freedom of speech of all of us. So freedom of speech, and freedom of speech is very important freedom, because without freedom of speech, you cannot have free market. You cannot have markets which, if the government can suppress information, if the government can distort information, then how would you know how markets should, how you would behave in the market?
Mm-hmm.
So this is very, very important. Then, if you will talk about property rights, I mean, regulations are undermining property rights where they still exist. So besides that, we have government motors, that we have socialized, almost socialized medicine. Even today, before the Obamacare would take force, even today, if you will look at the government spending on healthcare, it's 55%. And healthcare is the most regulated, the most over-regulated industry in the United States. So if you look at the other heavily regulated, almost destroyed markets, like financial market, or look how labor market is over-regulated, how rigid our labor market became. It's almost more rigid than the labor market of the so-called neo-socialist countries of Europe. So these are all the problems that we have in this field and in all others.
Talk about a little bit more of this, the healthcare system. You mentioned, did I hear you correctly? You say 55%?
Yes, 55% of all expenditures on healthcare are funded either by federal government or state governments or local governments.
And this is before the new rollout of Obamacare.
Yes, this is before. This is today. This is today. This
and
is
so not, the majority of all healthcare dollars are coming from government already, and yet this is the failure that Obamacare was supposed to cure.
That's right. If you will look at the Medicare, Medicaid spending, if you will look at the Bureau of Indian Affairs hospitals, at veterans hospitals, and all other government hospitals, county hospitals, you will see that that's how this number come from.
It's amazing.
And he will look also at the healthcare plan for government employees. And so it is already overregulated. It is already socialism. And the people are saying, no, this is free market. Free market screwed up our healthcare system, so we need more socialism. This is very sad. That's the same thing as many people misunderstand how this recession came out, that there's something wrong with free markets, that George W. Bush and other free marketeers screwed up free market, and Alan Greenspan. And so now we need more socialism to get out of the free market mess. There is nothing which is further from the truth than this.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting concept you mentioned earlier the privatization of virtually everything. And, historically, there was, I'm sure, quite a big resistance to the separation of church and state.
Yes.
And now what we're really talking about is the separation of money and state. We're talking about even the separation of justice and state, you know, in terms of looking at private options for police force, for courts, for juries, for money, competing currencies, and things of that nature. So it's an interesting progression that we seem to be on. And when we come back, we're going to be coming back in a few minutes because our break is coming up in just a minute, Yuri. But I'd like to have you talk a little bit about creating these structures that allow for the expansion of freedom and the establishment of liberty. And so, everyone, please stay with us. This is Radio Free Market. I'm your host, Michael McKay, talking with Dr. Yuri Maltsev, and we'll be back in just a minute. Please stay with us. And welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market. And so, Yuri, I wanted to ask you, now we've been talking about all of this, all these various topics. What do we do first? What's first?
I believe that the new Congress should identify everything which was done against the Constitution and the principles of liberty on which this country is founded, and then defund this. Projects. That would be probably about 80% of legislation which was adopted during the last 10, 15 years.
Right.
And I think that's the good start. And many politicians, not only libertarians, but Republican politicians do understand that at first you should dismantle to undo the damage which was inflicted on American economy, on our lifestyle, on our public mentality. Mm-hmm. So to begin with this, and then proceed with privatization, because again, privatization is the cornerstone of liberty.
You know, we talked about encroaching socialism, and I know you have your one-day plan, which I heartily endorse the one-day plan of Dr. Yuri Maltsev for bringing liberty. But let's also celebrate the encroaching freedom wherever we can find it. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking about that, I met my old friend. I saw my old friend. I was in Washington, D.C. a couple of days ago. And he is from the Republic of Georgia. You remember that? The country mm-hmm. which was attacked by Putin's Russia in 2008. And he's a great economist there. His name is Gia. And Gia told me that the president of Georgia, Saakashvili, who is being demonized by European Union and our mainstream press, he in his recent speech in Parliament, he proposed for Republic of Georgia to abolish the central banking, to go on competing currency regime, and to follow great principles of Ludwig von Mises, Friedrich August von Hayek, and Murray Rothbard. That's amazing that even in the former Soviet countries, the people who were raised under socialism, that they do understand what should be done. And I hope that our people in Washington, D.C. would follow this example.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about these building blocks, these structures that allow for liberty to flourish. And you know, since we are, and we take it that we are, behind the lines of socialism, privatization we've talked about in other shows that we've had, nullification of laws seem to be a topic that we need to all learn more about. And even secession is something that we should not be afraid of having in our conversation. Would you comment on that?
Yes, absolutely, yes. I think that the issue of nullification is extremely important. Nullification is the ability of state governments to nullify federal laws which they consider to be unconstitutional. That's the major principle of federalism. And in his recent book, Tom Woods, another eminent Austrian thinker, he wrote that, that's the principles that we should observe.
Right, so we're going to have to close out our show today, Yuri. And thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure as always.
I greatly appreciate you being with us today. So everyone, this is Michael McKay in Radio Free Market. Please visit us on the web, radiofreemarket.com, where you can download this and all of our shows for free. And until next week, folks, wherever you are, please stand up for freedom. Thank you for listening.